Hello, this is Ted Cazillo, and this is Data Doodle Radio, first episode. I've been thinking about this for a long time. Every time I talk to a source, and I can't quite translate their passion into words, I think, wouldn't it be good if I could just let them speak for themselves? So year after year, I get a little bit closer, and now that everybody else has a podcast, I figure, okay, I could do that. So here we go. My first guest is Bob McQueen. He's a longtime transportation expert. I first knew Bob through Dan Graham at Teradata and later through Gordon Feller at Meeting of the Minds. Bob is a longtime transportation expert and author of numerous books, most recently one that would be very interesting to the data community. It's Big Data Analytics for Connected Vehicles and Smart Cities. Among other things, perhaps that book would help coax the data industry into paying attention to smart cities a little bit more. Bob and I talked most recently in person at the Meeting of the Minds annual summit in Sacramento in December, and later by phone. And I asked him about one very interesting idea that he has about a money-back guarantee on transit. This would have a couple of different benefits for both transit operators and riders. So here's what he said about it.
So the idea of a money-back guarantee, and you know, this has evolved in dialogue with several agencies, seems to be like a catalyst question. It doesn't provide the single answer when you ask the question, but it leads to a lot more thought about what you would need to do to offer a money-back guarantee. Mm-hmm. As a transportation operator, my concern, and you know, this may be a Scottish perspective, but how much is it going to cost me? Mm-hmm. You know, if I don't really understand the quality of my service, I don't understand the prevailing conditions, I don't understand the demand fluctuations for my service, then I could end up paying a lot of money in money-back guarantees. Mm-hmm. And a money-back guarantee is likely to be implemented on some sort of reliability measure. You know, how many times over the course of a week was I delayed by more than a certain amount of time, which would then be the threshold for kicking in the money-back guarantee. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to implement some kind of system, then you should have some measurable objectives in mind. Very often in transportation, particularly in the U.S., when we implement something, we try to measure activity rather than measure effect. But in particular, talking to transportation agencies, I've started to realize that this is a good way to start talking about performance management generally. You know, just role play for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Pretend you're going to offer a money-back guarantee and then run it as an internal process and then find out how much would it cost you, given your current capabilities, given your current performance management capability, and given your ability to manage service reliability, how much would it cost you to offer a money-back guarantee under different scenarios for the threshold and reliability? Mm-hmm. That, to me, would be a valuable exercise, even if you didn't go any further, because it would give you a tangible value that you could retrieve, you could recoup that value if you improved the service. So, for example, in talking to the transit agency in Colombia, TransMillennium, the thought was, well, if you did this, ran an internal process, and then understood that maybe it would cost you $10 million a year, I'm just picking a number out there, to offer a money-back guarantee, then my thinking is, well, you could then go to your budget chief and say, look, we should spend $10 million on service improvement, because we could then offer this money-back guarantee. It's a kind of tangible justification, mm-hmm. a business justification for investing in improving the quality of service.
This would be based on an internal exercise then.
First of all, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the smart thing to do is to run the exercise internally. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, don't tell the public that you're thinking about this just yet until you understand whether it's feasible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can just hear a politician, though, say, Well, that's just fake data because, you know, that's just internal. You fix that somehow.
Right. Well, what we say then to the politician is, no, we're doing due diligence and we now understand the risks and we've quantified the revenue loss that we might incur. Mm-hmm. So now let's try a pilot project. But of course, the problem with a pilot on something like this, it would be very difficult to stop the money back guarantee mm-hmm. after you started it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a ratchet. You can't.
Absolutely.
You can't
yep.
go back.
Yep.
And then I think in some past conversation with you, you mentioned another benefit of this, which is if you got people to opt in to providing their location, letting you monitor their location in exchange yeah. for money back or whatever it is, then you'd have really valuable data.
Valuable data, but also, to be fair to people with respect to privacy, we would ask them to opt in to be tracked. Mm-hmm. And then in return, they would be part of the money-back guarantee. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to something that Washington Metro did a few years ago, where they implemented a smart card ticketing system, and you had two ways to get the card. You could be anonymous, or you could be registered. Mm-hmm. If you were anonymous, then any money on the card would be lost if it was stolen or if you lost it. If you chose to be registered, then they would offer you a money-back guarantee, if you like, a balance recovery feature. Mm-hmm. Somewhere between 95-98% of people chose to be registered because they wanted that feature. So I think there's a lesson that if you provide people with a value, with a service, then they would be prepared to trade some privacy for that service.
Mm-hmm. You know, back to that money-back guarantee, it seems like it would provide another kind of benefit, which is if when it came time for procurement, you could more easily budget money, allocate money for new projects. Is that a benefit that you foresee?
Yeah, I think generally having better performance management, understanding the effects of your investment, empowers you to take an index-linked approach to future budgeting rather than a performance-based approach rather than just indexing it. Rather than say we invested $100 million last year, let's just add 10%, you can actually relate the investment to the effect that you achieved. Mm-hmm. And this is particularly fascinating to me because I think politicians ask questions like, hey, Bob, I want to move people to transit. I want to shift people to transit. You know, how much should I spend for every percentage? Mm-hmm. I think before you're comfortable enough to offer a money-back guarantee, you need to have the insight and understanding on the prevailing conditions, including the reliability that people are experiencing, and also how is the demand for your service going to change over the day, over the week, over the month, because that obviously will have an impact on service quality mm-hmm. as well.
Now, who's doing this so far, or who's looking at a money-back guarantee so far?
Well, actually, I don't see anyone in the US, but in the UK, on the railway system, they have something called delay pay, which allows them to offer a money-back guarantee, I think, if you're delayed by more than 3 hours. I don't know the details of it, but I think that's an example of a system that's live. And I know that the railways were privatized. You know, they have two different private agencies. They have an agency that runs the infrastructure, the track, mm-hmm. and they have a number of different private companies that run the railway systems, the services. This is the United Kingdom. They started off, first of all, by the public sector initiating a requirement for the private sector to report performance. So they started to publish what their performance was against their targets. And they ran that for a little while to get comfortable with it, and then started to offer the money-back mm-hmm. guarantee.
Mm-hmm. And what's been the public reaction?
Well, I don't know what the public reaction is generally, but I talked to a friend of mine in Scotland, so this might be a Scottish perspective, and he's delighted because he hasn't been required to pay for a trip for a couple of months. that might not be good from an operations point of view.
So the service is that bad.
Yeah. And I would also think that people that may not have complained in the past may now complain because there's a reward involved.
Of course. And if they opted in to have their location tracked, then the operator could say, I don't know, you weren't there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There has to be an enforcement. But all these things required to support a money-back guarantee or provide the insight and understanding required for the operator to be comfortable with it are all very good things for business, because it requires you to use big data and use analytics to understand what's going on and quantify the risk.
We touched a little bit on procurement. How would that factor in this kind of data?
Well, I think future procurements could be much more performance related, where you offer a fee for the private sector to operate the system, but that fee might be part fixed fee and part performance related.
So the governments would be more, cities or whoever would be more willing to cough up the money.
It certainly might make it easier to define the budget because you have a business justification, but it could also shift the focus onto performance. You know, how many dollars are we paying for every percentage improvement in reliability on the service?
Mm-hmm. Do you suppose that would force any change, any improvement in the way that procurement is done?
Yeah, I think the procurement would shift an emphasis, if you like, from buying a service to buying the results, to buying the reliability.
So I think at one point in the past you were talking about how when people put out an RFP, request for proposal, they often make the mistake of telling you what they want by telling you how they want it done.
Yeah. I think by having very prescriptive procurement documents, it's very difficult for the private sector to innovate. And it may be the case, not always the case, but it may be the case that the public agency doesn't have a complete view of the current capabilities of technology. So sometimes it's better to state what you want by way of a series of high-level requirements and then ask the private sector to innovate in coming up with the solutions to meet your objectives, to meet your requirements. And this also touches on the need for procurement to be more interactive when we're dealing with advanced technologies.
You could almost imagine taking this agile development and applying it here, couldn't you?
Absolutely. And while we're on the subject of performance measures, why don't we apply some performance measures to the procurement process?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we have some defined measures on what we're trying to achieve with procurement in terms of value for money, but also the time it's taking to procure things? And let's see if we can shorten the time and get more value for money at the same time.
Sounds good to me. Let's just hope they can do that for some systems that I use all the time, such as BART.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be unfair to single anybody out, but generally across the country and maybe across the world, we've been very familiar with deploying asphalt, concrete, and steel, and procuring roads, procuring transit systems. And now we're moving into a kind of softer area where we're procuring services, we're procuring information technology, and that may require a different approach to procurement.
I look forward to it. By the way, you have a book coming out.
Actually, I just published a book back in August about big data analytics, connected vehicles, and smart cities, published by Artec House. And that's designed to address the whole issue of how do you understand how to get the best use of big data and analytics in a smart city. My contention is that you must go from data to information to insight to action, and the book kind of explains how you can cover that. It's called Big Data Analytics for Connected Vehicles and Smart Cities, published by Artec House. And there is another book being cooked at the moment, being baked along with a co-author called Integrated Payment Systems for Smart Cities. And it's probably going to be published sometime later in 2019.
Well, good. Well, thank you, Bob. I really appreciate the time you spent here.
Not at all.
And we will we'll be watching. Well, that's it for the first edition of Data Doodle Radio. Hope you liked it. Hope you want more, because I'll keep trying to give you more. I found it interesting, and I'll try to improve it as I go. We'll see how it goes. For now, please send me your generous comments. You can do that through the online form at datadoodle.com/about and email at podcast@datadoodle.com. That's datadoodle.com. You can also tweet about it. Use the hashtag smart cities, all one word. And please also include my Twitter ID, which is @datadoodle, datadoodle. Thanks. I'm Ted Cazillo, and this has been the first edition of Data Doodle Radio.